This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello and welcome to L&G Talks. In this episode, we're talking about the role of duration in credit portfolios. Is it a friend or foe for bond investors? I'm joined by Amélie Chawner, Head of Fixed Income Strategic Initiatives, and Alex Mack, Head of Rates and Inflation. They've just written a white paper on this very topic, which will be published shortly. Thank you both for joining me. So let's dig deeper into this topic. When deciding how much duration to hold in a bond portfolio, what are the key questions investors typically ask themselves? And what do the answers tell us about the challenges involved?
So I think investors generally ask three questions. Do they think they know something about the path to future interest rates? Do they believe they're being paid to own duration? And do they believe that duration will act as a hedge for the risk assets, the credit and equities that are in their portfolios? So the first of those, do investors believe that they know what will happen to future interest rates? It's the big macroeconomic data points that really matter for rates markets. And our view is that forecasting those variables has a really poor track record and that investors should be skeptical about their ability to do so. But the fact that they're not, and that people do invest as if they can say something with confidence about the future macroeconomic developments, provides opportunities for us to trade against them. And we've written extensively about that in the past. The second reason that people might own interest rates, might own duration risk, is because they believe that they're being paid to take that risk. I think we can sort of simplify that to, if the term premium is big, they're being paid more. If the term premium is small, they're being paid less. Where the term premium is the difference between the average investor's belief about where interest rates is going to go and the price that they're being offered in the market. We look at term premiums, yes, they're increasing. They've increased quite a lot over the past few years, but they're still at really low levels. You're still only being paid a bit more than 0.5% per year on a 10-year government bond to take on what is quite a lot of volatility. The third reason that people might own it, and this is the primary reason that we want to own duration in our unconstrained bond portfolios, is that they believe it's going to act as a good hedge for the risk exposures that they have. In our unconstrained bond portfolios, that's a good hedge to the credit risk that we hold, the credit risk that's providing us with a positive expected return over time.
Amélie, in this paper, you discuss your analysis on the evolving relationship between credit spreads and government bond yields going as far back as 1989. What did this reveal and why does it matter for duration decisions?
The purpose of this white paper that Alex and I wrote, we have run several analyses, which all point to the fact that the relationship between risk assets and government bond yields is not static. And the specific one you're referring to really looks at changes in US credit spreads on a monthly basis and compares that to changes in US Treasury yields. And we've run this since 1989, which is the longest time series we have for good quality data on spread. This analysis shows that in 42% of the monthly observations, US credit spreads and US government yields move in the same direction. So that means that when US credit spread widen, US Treasury yields go up. And when US credit spread tighten, US Treasury yields go down. This means that in 58% of the cases, US credit spreads and US government bond yields move in the opposite direction. And we think it's really interesting because we have heard many market participants, particularly in the fixed income spread, point to the fact that duration was almost always a good hedge for credit. But our analysis suggests that in 42% of the cases, it's actually not a good hedge. And actually, 42% is quite a large number. And that sort of analysis really helps inform how we think about duration in the context of a credit fund. So that's true for credit spread and government bond yields, but we also wanted to go back further in time. And in order to go back further in time, we need to move away from credit spreads, for which, again, we have good history from the 80s only. And this time we looked at equities from the 60s.
Yeah, cheers, Amélie. Looking back to the 60s allows us to see quite a few different cycles. And so we see the big inflationary periods of the 70s and 80s. And what we're really looking to test when we do that is how scared of inflation do people have to be to think that we're going to see a positive correlation between equity prices and bond prices. And when we look back to the 60s, what we see is that when people believe that inflation is going to be persistently too high, and we define too high as about 1% above target. Inflation targeting didn't exist for that entire time, but it serves for the purpose of this hypothesis. And the second is that it's persistent. So it's too high, it's about 1% above target, and it's persistent. It's lasting for more than a year. And when we see that, when we see inflation above 3%, sort of five quarters from now in people's forecasts, we almost always see positively correlated relationship between equities and duration. So they're behaving together. And that makes sense because, you know, when inflation is too high, interest rates are likely to rise, and that rise in interest rates is likely to cause negative economic outcomes. So you're getting a loss on your bond portfolio or on your bonds as interest rates rise, and losses on your equities as the impact of that rising rates on, you know, weaker growth pushes down equity valuations as well, equity prices as well. And then what about the opposite case? So we can see quite clearly from the same data that when people expect inflation to be persistently below 2%, we see negative correlations almost all of the time in the coming quarter. And it's in that bit in the middle then when it's a bit less certain and when you see much more variation. And that's where really the skill as active managers comes in.
And beyond considerations for credit managers, the last point that Alex made, observing the correlation dynamics between equities and government bonds, is really important. It does have profound implications for multi-asset portfolios, which have been traditionally built on the assumptions that bonds, and more specifically government bonds, are almost always negatively correlated with equities, hence offset some of their risk factors. But the analysis that we've put together suggests that it may not be always true. So again, same dynamics that we observe between credit spreads and government bonds, we can see the same dynamics being applied to between equities and government bonds, albeit for much longer time frames. So we think that the evidence is really robust here.
Yeah. And I guess we can say that, you know, there are two main messages that we want to get out in this paper. One is that we think having a static allocation to duration is something that we would really warn against. And the second is trying to explain how we think you can dynamically adjust your duration to achieve much better portfolio outcomes.
Thank you both. That really explains the complexities of duration, especially depending on the market dynamics. My next question is, what are the risks then of managing duration in bond portfolios?
Yes, the so what, right? We've run all these interesting analyses, and how does that help inform how we think about duration in the context of our strategies? So the information that these analyses provide us with is that if you are a credit manager, in 58% of cases, duration may be a helpful hedge. And in 42% of cases, duration may be unhelpful. Now, look, 58% is quite a lot, and many credit managers may think it's a risk worth taking. So they will have exposure to credit, and they will hold on to that relatively high duration exposure because they think in 58% of the cases, it will be helpful. But the thing is that in some scenarios, duration may really add to your woes when credit spreads are widening and duration is not delivering the results that you were expecting. And we've experienced this in 2022. And we're going through this again amid the Middle Eastern crisis, which is driving oil prices and inflation expectations higher. You can see the market reaction is that credit spreads are widening, equities are selling off, and government bond yields are rising. So you're in that prime high correlation scenario, which is really painful for risk assets and for credit portfolios. Now, look, if you're a very long-term holder of credit assets, this risk may be acceptable. But if you have clients who are quite sensitive to short-term drawdown risk, you can see how duration can be a difficult risk to manage. So we think about performance outcomes for our strategies and our client, but volatility and risk-adjusted performance is really important to us as well. So we've already extensively discussed the fact that duration is not always a good hedge for credit risk, but also structurally, it may add quite a bit to the volatility of an overall portfolio. And we see that when we break down the sources of risk across various credit assets, we can see that, for example, a bond with a maturity of 25 years or over faces a lot of volatility risk derived from duration. So we have to be very mindful of that when we allocate the portfolio across various asset classes, but also when we set duration at the whole portfolio level. Because if it's not adding to performance, or if you run into an adverse market event for duration, and also it's adding to your volatility, then it's a very poor outcome for your strategies and for your clients. So we try to take this into consideration as well.
So what do these challenges mean for unconstrained bond portfolios, given that they aim to provide better risk-adjusted returns?
So there are many types of unconstrained bond strategies out there. Some have relatively low market beta, which means that they have relatively low outright exposure to key fixed income market metrics, such as credit risk and duration. And they rely on alpha for return generation. But for many other unconstrained bond strategies, or sometimes called flexible bond strategies, credit exposure is a key component for return generation. And this is the case for L&G's global unconstrained bond strategies. So for those, it's really key to manage duration appropriately to ensure that it acts as a diversifier of risk rather than the source of risk duplication. And the theory of staying long duration to hedge against credit spreads widening was really tested in 2022 when we saw the return of inflation, which altered correlation dynamics between credit spreads and government bond yields, leading to large drawdowns across fixed income markets, as well as many unconstrained or flexible bond strategies in the market. So again, this is something we have to be cognizant of when we construct a portfolio.
How do we manage duration in our unconstrained bond strategies then? What are the principles that guide your decisions?
What we really believe is that we only want to own duration in our unconstrained bond portfolios when we think it's going to provide a good hedge for the credit assets that we own, the credit assets that are providing a positive expected return. How do we do that? Well, I think the minimum that we can do, that is sort of the least bad option, is to move with the regime. So you typically see correlation moving regimes that hold for a long period of time. So strongly negative correlations are typically followed by negative correlations, and strongly positive correlations are typically followed by positive correlations. But we try to go further than that, and we can say that, look, what we really care about here is, when are investors more concerned about the risk of high inflation than they are about the risk of low growth? Because when that's the case, we believe we're likely to see a positive correlation. And that's when we can have a bunch of triggers to reduce the duration of the portfolio. When, say, inflation in 5 quarters time is forecast to be around 3%. So that's what I talked about earlier when I talked about calibrating using historic data back to 1964. We can also say that when inflation is printing above 4% today on a year-on-year rate, so sort of 2% above target, we very often see positive correlations in the next quarter. And we can finally, we can look at market pricing to see when the credibility of central banks is being challenged. Again, we're likely to see positive correlations in the next quarter. And that really helps us to reduce duration when people are very clearly becoming more scared about high inflation than they are about low growth. So I'll go through the two that we've got so far. So we've got one, we can move with the regimes, because typically the correlation regime lasts more than one period. Second, we can adjust with some key indicators of when investors are becoming more scared about high inflation than they are about low growth. And then third, what we try to do in the periods where none of those two things are triggered is say, given the starting point, given the stories that investors tell themselves today, and given the data that we know is available in the calendar over the next 1, 2, and 3 months, is it easier or more difficult for investors to become concerned about high inflation? Is it easy or very difficult for them to become concerned about recession, and take a view on that? And by answering those three questions in stages, we can systematically try to move the duration around so that we're not owning lots of duration as a hedge for lots of credit in a period when the two are behaving the same. So that's how we get to the decision about whether or not we want to own duration. And then the final, and it's really important, is that we size the duration we own, we size the hedge, we size the insurance that we're taking out to match the size of credit risk that we have in the funds. So, and I think that's really important. There's often a tendency to talk about relative to some benchmark. You know, the insurance that we want to take out, the hedge that we want to take out is sized appropriately, and the appropriate way to size it, we believe, is versus the credit risk that we own.
As we all know, the current market backdrop is challenging for investors right now. With that in mind, have you made any adjustments to your duration positioning in your unconstrained portfolios?
We currently believe that the effectiveness of duration as a hedge is diminished. So our duration positioning has turned more defensive. And while the AI-related disinflation narratives previously supported the insurance value of duration, markets are now pricing in a more inflationary outlook as a result of the Middle Eastern conflict. Higher oil prices, coupled with geopolitical uncertainty, increase the likelihood of a positive correlation between interest rates and credit spreads. And as a result, we have reduced duration exposure in our global unconstrained portfolios.
So looking ahead, what are the key forces that will shape how investors think about duration in the coming years?
Circumstances are going to change a lot over the next few years. We can't be confident in what's going to happen. We're not going to pretend that we're soothsayers. But when other people think they know what's going to happen, there'll be opportunities for us to trade actively. And second, as events change, we shouldn't be holding a static allocation to duration, particularly if we are saying that that duration is primarily there as a hedge for the credit risk that we own. So we will continue to move it actively, increasing it when we think that it's much easier for investors to become concerned about recession risk, when it's very hard for investors to become concerned about the risks of high inflation, and reducing it like we are at the moment when inflation is a dominant fear for markets.
Brilliant. Thank you. I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. Thank you, Emily and Alex, for a very interesting discussion.
Thank you very much for having us.
Cheers. Thanks for having us.
For those keen to explore this topic further, do keep an eye out for Emily and Alex's upcoming white paper. Thank you for listening.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of L&G's Asset Management Division, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and we're not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general market, economic or political issues, or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against L&G in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this podcast contains third-party information, the accuracy or completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information, not for distribution to any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulations. Copyright 2025. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Unless otherwise stated, references herein to L&G, we and us are meant to capture the global conglomerate that includes, in the European Economic Area, LGIM Managers Europe Limited, authorised and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a UCITS management company pursuant to European Communities Undertaking for Collective Investment in Transferable Securities Regulations 2011 as amended, and as an Alternative Investment Fund Manager pursuant to the European Union Alternative Investment Fund Managers Regulations 2013 as amended. In the USA, Legal and General Investment Management America, Inc., a US SEC regulated investment advisor. In Japan, Legal and General Investment Management Japan, KK, a Japan FSA registered investment management company. In Hong Kong, issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, which is licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission. And in Singapore, issued by LGIM Singapore Pte Limited, company registration number 20223187 6W, which is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on LinkedIn or on our website.